Bitcoin this really interesting emerging concept that it is going to return the power of choice back to people, where the government is now actually responsible to deliver on their promises and do a great job, or risk that people can like very simply take their capital elsewhere. Bitcoin as freedom tech is something that is enabling new ways of thinking about what it means to be a global citizen and reimagining how digital nomads can live their life. And this week we are talking with true global citizen. Jordi Yonk is the head of growth at Sadlantis and the founder of btceventsmaps.com. It's a deep dive into thinking about what borderless money means for people who aspire to be borderless themselves. Hope you enjoy. All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week we are joined by Jordi Yonk. Jordi, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to be here, Scott. Thank you for inviting.
So we're going to be talking about, I guess, a variety of topics today. You've got a really interesting background. I saw that you started your career as a commercial airline pilot. I wonder if maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and your Bitcoin origin story.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, as you say, I started as an airline pilot. Although before starting as an airline pilot, I wanted to understand the aviation industry because I was so curious about it. So I started working at airports, like first just loading bags into airplanes, selling tickets, customer support, check-in counter desks, all that. So then to me, it was easier, you know, to understand the whole complexity of the whole operation of flying a plane from A to B. So that just gives you an idea of who I am, no? So why do I do the thing? So when I get into one rabbit hole, I like to explore it from the different angles to understand it. And after being a pilot and starting a couple of startups and as I like to call it, successfully failing, so I discovered Bitcoin. And it was just like this type of rabbit hole that you start for one thing and then you end up looking it through different angles and from different points of views. And this is how kind of how I got into Bitcoin, just by curiosity. Initially, my curiosity was money, like what is money? And then I discovered that there is much more things than money. It's a tool, it's a technology, and then it's a communication language within people. And then you start seeing that you can communicate with people from different languages, different products. So that was like my origin story on how I come from one sector to another one that has nothing to do at all.
And I guess you know, to take that step further, you've made a career out of traveling, and now you're thinking about Bitcoin in a lot of different ways as kind of a digital nomad or a person of borderless person.
Yes. So when I started my career as an airline pilot, flying and traveling was just part of the deal. So it was not something that I was focused on. It was just part of the work days. So, and today I met with another digital nomad, and he told me a similar thing that I start to see that it repeats with many digital nomads, which is that we digital nomads are or have been digital nomads long before we had a category or we had this name to attach to ourselves. So I have been, to me, I didn't know there was like this thing called digital nomading, which is a group of, and I don't know if you knew that, but depending on which numbers that you look at, there are like between 30 to 50 million digital nomads in the world, which is, it's a significant number. And those are just digital nomads, meaning digital nomad, a person that doesn't settle in one place. So it's changing from one place to another all the time. But then there is this other category that as well, it depends on statistics and the databases you're looking, that are called the remote workers. And if digital nomads are around 50 million, remote workers are around 500 million. So it's 10 times bigger. So it's like, yeah, I've been traveling and living abroad and working from different places of the world for a while without even knowing that was a thing.
What do you think is the, if there are digital nomads listening out there, like, what is the application of Bitcoin to change how people who like, you know, borderless people thinking about how they're already living their lives?
Yeah, this is like a great question to ask. I travel from country to country, not only because of my work, but also because I like to discover this type of people, these segments of the population. And to do that, to make it easier for me, I go to festivals and conferences about nomading. In fact, I still have like this conference band, wristband, welcome to Albufeira. If any nomad can see this on the screen, the Nomad World Summit. So I go to places like that to be able to answer to these type of questions. And the more I talk to digital nomads, the more I discover that they care one and only one thing, which is freedom. The fact is that they don't really know what freedom means, because I talk to Bitcoiners, I talk to local circular economies, organizations or people that live in circular economies, I talk to nomads, I talk to frequent travelers, and they all have different meanings for freedom. But at least it's an easy entry point. For example, you cannot say to a nomad, Bitcoin. If you say that word, the perception they have, it's like you are either a crypto bro, or you are an evil speculator, or worse, you are just a scammer trying to get the quick rich, get rich quick scheme or something like that. But they are looking for freedom, right? So the more I talk to them, is the more I start understanding what type of freedom they are looking for. The digital nomad, the average digital nomad is normally a man in his late 30s, early 40s. Half of them are Americans traveling the world, and the others are mostly Europeans also traveling the world. And normally they travel either alone or with their spouses, and I think it's 25% have kids. Again, all those numbers depend on the statistics and the studies that have done them. But at least we have like an idea of who are we talking about. And they're looking for freedom. And they think that once they achieve geographical freedom, they're free. But then when they need to pay for accommodation or their food or whatever, they realize that sometimes they are not as free as they thought they were. Because even though they are maybe an American couple living in Da Nang or in Hoi An in Vietnam, they have to work still for maybe a couple of customers. They have clients all over the world and they need to get paid. And sometimes, you know, like normally digital nomads, they open like these neo banks that they allow you to move freely from one currency to another. But still, when your bank app discovers that you are logging in for today from this country, tomorrow with this different IP, and you're transferring, normally they are big sums of money, because it's not like a typical employee that gets the same amount every month, like when you have a payroll. But maybe this month you have a client and maybe next month you don't. So maybe this month you have to charge your client for a big chunk of money because they pay you 50% of the project upfront or things like that. So then the bank starts making questions. And the typical reaction of a bank, it's before asking questions, is block your money. So then it's like this group of people that they think they were free, but now they cannot pay rent. So this is my entry point to the nomads. And this is how nomads can get related to Bitcoin. When they discover that what they thought it was freedom, it was just a partial freedom, which was geographical freedom and not financial freedom. And this is my entry point, because you can never tell that the words, as I said, there are like a couple of taboo words for digital nomads. And those are Bitcoin or Noster. If you say those words, you're going to get like this eye roll, like another crypto bro. So this is how I get to connect the digital nomad. And you know, this is just the beginning, because once they have discovered that there are tools that allow us to be financially free, then they start looking at the other points of view of freedom. As I said, they thought they were free, but then they start to narrow down, and what they had, like they had this circle of freedom, and then the circle starts narrowing down and maybe they are only 25% free. But at least now they know, because before they didn't know what they didn't know. Now they know, and now they see, oh, but there is another type of freedom. It's financial freedom. And I'm not talking about the FIRE movement, like financially free, retire early. It's just that they can own their value that they want to use for purchase food or whatever. And then from there, they start connecting the dots of the freedom a nomad has with the personal sovereignty, like this freedom aligned with the individual. And then they start thinking about, oh, we can change from one country to another. Then here comes the geo-arbitrager point of view. And then just from that point is when they realize that this is something that might be of interest to them. And this is how I get them interested into Bitcoin, the Bitcoin rabbit hole.
I'd love to just go a little bit deeper there. And you could explain for the listeners what you mean by geo-arbitrage.
Right. So let's say that you are, just to make it simple, one person is listening to me. He's living in one place, but he's not happy because maybe in that place, they are not treating that person as he wants to be treated. I'm not saying he's treated well or bad. He's not treated the way he wants to be treated. What does it mean? Maybe he thinks that, imagine he's living in a state and he has to pay taxes, and then these taxes allow him to have maybe free roads, free education, free healthcare, and safety when he walks on the street. But it's not the level of education, healthcare, blah, 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 that he wants to. So then he starts looking for other places that he can be treated better. So he discovers that maybe if he's an American, maybe he decides that maybe if he goes to Europe, some country in Europe, he will be treated better. So then he can arbitrage in being in one country or another based on the services that country offers them. So it's the point of view is to switch the point of view of that majority of people have, that I was born here, therefore I have to live here and die here. So no, we have to go back to the origins. Mankind, back on the origins, we were nomads. And what happened? We were traveling in small tribes, small families, in small groups of people. And I'm no anthropologist, but I'm saying just basic information here that maybe we have forgotten because we have settled now and we have cities or states, nation states, so countries. So back in the day, we didn't settle because we didn't have all the resources that we need to have to survive. So that's why we move from place to place. Then we learn how to control crops, animals, to get shelter. And that's when we decided, all right, we'll settle here. Because now that we can control and we can have shelter and we can have food for the whole year, we don't need to move from one place to another. And that's when we decided to build the tribes and to build countries. And in each of these tribes or in each of these countries, I'm using simple words. Of course, there are more specific words to define what types of organization the people organize themselves. But the idea is that we humans decided to build the rules that would rule our group of people in a specific place. And this is today a country. But there's people that is not happy. So I'm saying, just go back to the origin. We have been doing that for centuries, for millennia. Why change now? And it's like, we have like this message, like, if you're born here, you have to live here forever. And maybe for the Americans, this is more obvious, but especially in Europe, I live in Europe, it's not normal to change from one country to another, either from one city to another. And so this is what I'm saying by geo-arbitraging, just going back to the roots and say, if you're not happy where you are, you can move, you can go to another place that treats you not better or worse, that treats you in a way that is adequate to you, that fits your interests and your needs.
Yeah, it's a really interesting, like, you know, the evolution of society. And, you know, there's some high profile examples, I think, of places like Sweden and the UK, where sort of like hostile changes were made to the tax codes that really penalized the ultra wealthy people. And instead of collecting more tax revenue, those people just left and took their assets with them. And this is sort of a strategy that has maybe historically been available to the ultra wealthy and not to ordinary people. And I think that some of these, you know, some of the rooted nature of human civilization and what we experience now really evolved out of the government providing people the ability to protect private property. And this is something that I guess nomads, this is the reason they stopped moving around, was that people wanted to start trying to accumulate stuff, have upward social mobility, And so that this is now something that Bitcoin has kind of like redemocratized and provides people the ability now to escape capital controls. Like, you know, this is now turned into something where, you know, governments force you to use their currency. It can be difficult to get significant amounts of that currency out into a different currency. And then because of that, it's sort of like turned the social contract upside down, where we call them civil servants, but the governments don't truly serve anyone today other than, you know, the government. And I think that's fair to say in most places. And so, yeah, there's this, I think with Bitcoin, this really interesting emerging concept that it is going to return the power of choice back to people, where the government is now actually responsible to deliver on their promises and do a great job, or risk that people can like very simply take their capital elsewhere. And so maybe this is the early stages of this now. And I think you're seeing this in places like El Salvador, where there actually are Bitcoiners choosing to relocate to El Salvador and taking their money with them. And it is creating a change. And yeah, well, what are your thoughts on sort of that broad trend?
Yes, and this is something that we're seeing. This is a trend that we're seeing in the West world. So it's like we think that we are the first world, so we can do these things. And I like to change it. I like to tell it differently. It's like there is no first and third world anymore. There is what will become the first world and what will become the third world. And if we don't pay attention of what we're doing, we are on a path to become the third world. And it's fine. You know, it's fine. So this is evolution. This is how we, the human and all species, evolve. We learn from our mistakes. And I'm telling you this from the perspective of a Spaniard. So in Europe, I live in Spain, and we conquered South America. And now it's a reflection of what the future will be. So you have Venezuela, you have Colombia, you have Argentina, all these countries, they are in deep trouble. And why? Because they were following our indications, like socialism and communism, so things that we brought there. So now what I see is that they are, I think they touched rock bottom. It cannot be worse, I hope. No, I'm hoping for my South American friends there. But I think that we are following the playbook they follow. When I say we, it's like we Spaniards, that can be extrapolated to Europeans, that can be extrapolated to the West world. And if we do not learn from them now, we'll be there, maybe in one or two generations, but they will get up. And the example that you were mentioning, El Salvador. So I was there, for example, last year for adopting Bitcoin, the conference. A couple of months ago, I was in Costa Rica, in Ubita. So I'm going to these types of places to discover the effects and the impact Bitcoin is having in these local economies. And what I can say is that communities that are better impacted and are progressing the most are the ones that Bitcoin is part of their economy from a grassroots point of view. So my experience in Ubita, for example, in this small village in the south of Costa Rica, was much more refreshing than my story in El Salvador, where Bitcoin has the legal tender denomination when I was there, which is not anymore there. But I have to tell you, I was there with my team, you know, from Atlantis, and we were going to the groceries, go to shops. So we wanted to interact and to communicate with Bitcoin in shops. Nobody knew how this worked. Nobody. So I remember we were in this grocery store, and we wanted to pay for our food, and the teller, he didn't know, so he had to ask for help. The other person that came didn't know, so we had to ask for a third person to help. So it was three people just trying to charge us while behind us the queue was forming. So compare that to my experience in Ubita, in Costa Rica, where I went to buy some bread, and immediately the baker, he said, he should show me a QR code, like, I don't know, 4,000 sats or whatever it was. Next day in the street, some person selling watermelons in the street, in a street post. Yeah, how many SATS is that? He showed me his app, the QR code, beep, and it paid. So I can tell you that there are places and places. So I believe that unless we really have a problem to solve, nobody that forces us to follow one route or the other will make us progress or advance in this case. So that's what I'm saying, that unless the West world suffers as the South Americans or Central Americans I have seen as they suffer, or we're going down to this path. Yesterday I was talking to this other Bitcoiner. He told me that, you know, like this metaphor that you put a frog in a pot and you boil the water. He told me it's not a frog in a boiler pot. The frog is in a jacuzzi. So we in the West world, we're in a jacuzzi. It's warm, but it's comfy, you know? So until the water hits to 100 degrees or whatever, we're not going to understand that we need something like that. This is what I have seen with my eyes in all the communities I've been discovering. We need to suffer, man. I'm sorry. So this is the only thing I feel that we will learn. And, you know, it's like this other great quote that says that strong men make good times make weak men, and weak men destroy the whole thing. So we have to start over and over again. We need to suffer a little bit. I'm not looking for a war, but I'm looking for enough suffering for people to wake up. Here in Spain, I pay 50% taxes. I'm not talking about property taxes or all that. I'm talking about all taxes together. So we're working 6 months in Spain for the government. So now it's June. This month, I'm still working for my government. I still haven't made any money. So, and we still don't wake up. What is the wake up call? How many months I have to work for the government for me to wake up? And look, there's nothing wrong with working for your government if the government gives you what you want. But if what it gives you, you don't believe is aligned with money you pay, then there is a mismatch here. So that's my point of view. And this goes back to this geo-arbitrager, the flag theorist, and digital nomads, and frequent travelers, and at the end, the sovereign individual saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to do everything on my own because I don't like how the world is doing the decisions that affecting me.
Yeah, you know, I like to think about, there are a lot of different things that Bitcoin can do and offer. And your point about El Salvador, I totally agree with. And I think, you know, spending Bitcoin is one aspect of unlocking freedom. But, you know, I don't know that people have really understood that one thing that it does provide everyone today is basically a Swiss bank account on your phone. Like, this is a borderless, uncensorable bank account. And like, that one thing is like, it's just so valuable. Like, it's and inside that bank account, the only thing you can keep in there is the only form of money that can't be arbitrarily diluted, which is, it's like you put those two things together and like you almost don't need it to be able to do anything else, as long as you can maybe access that money to move it into some money you might need to spend locally.
To us, this is very easy to understand because we have put the hours, we have went down the rabbit hole, but there's like, how much? 95% or 99% of the population hasn't gone into that rabbit hole for whichever reason, which is normally they are not forced to. They were not forced to it. How are you forced to go down to this rabbit hole? Most of the times, it's because you're forced to it because there's a crisis. You have some issues. You have to suffer. So how do we make? You cannot tell to all your population, now we're going to use Bitcoin. Wait, what is this? Maybe I don't still know how to charge with credit cards because I'm unbanked and I don't know how to create like these digital things. So it's like, slow down, please. So first I need to have like a real problem, like maybe having thousands of clients that they want to pay with Bitcoin. Maybe this is my problem. I will start to learn how to accept Bitcoin every day. And this is another group of friends from Argentina, the guys from La Cripta. You should talk to them as well. They're called La Cripta, but they are full Bitcoiners, 100%. And they, every Tuesday, I think, they wanted to do like Pizza Tuesday, something like that. So on their way, and they're meeting, they work all together in one place. So they, on the way to from their houses to the place, they always walk by a pizzeria. So every Tuesday, they said, do you accept Bitcoin? No. But then a second person came later. Do you accept Bitcoin? We want to buy a couple of pizzas. No. And after a couple of weeks, the guy, the owner of the pizzeria said, wait, so if I say yes, maybe I'm able to get like to open my business to a whole new set of customers. All right. So next time they come, I will ask them, what is Bitcoin? And this is how they onboarded a merchant. So only if you discover that by not accepting this, there is a pain point, maybe you're going to get some interest into the topic.
And so you're involved in a few different like kind of global Bitcoin initiatives, I'll say, but one of them is in your hometown in Barcelona. What's the Bitcoin community in Barcelona like?
Oh, yes. And I'm so happy to talk about it. It's called Barcelona Bitcoin Only. And the only, it's super important. So we are a group of around 1,000 people, which is big. Barcelona has 1.5, 1.6 million inhabitants. So this is the biggest Bitcoin only community in Spain. Of, you know, Spain, 47 million inhabitants. And there are a couple of communities. And I travel to many of them. But the Barcelona one is the most active. And by active, I cannot compare it to what's going on in Ubita in Costa Rica, for example, because they are the most dense Bitcoin adoption economy, right? In Barcelona, there are maybe a dozen or two dozens of merchants that accept Bitcoin, which means nothing. But what I mean by the most active is that out of these 1,000 people that we are on Telegram, that we're talking every day, nonstop, and we talk, you know, in Barcelona, we speak three languages, Catalan, Spanish, and English. So we speak in all the languages and we get to understand each other. It's amazing how this serendipitously, how it works. And not only we are active on Telegram, learning about, you know, talking about the hot topic. So a couple of weeks ago was the up return topic, or a couple of months ago, it was the quantum computers. So it's not only that we talk and we share information on how to live on Bitcoin or what Bitcoin is, but we also do meetups. And this is what I say by the most active. So we do at least one meetup a month. And then those meetups are in person and we meet between 50 to 100 people, which is a lot for being Bitcoiners. And in these meetups, we do some education. So for example, if the people is hot on the Telegram group saying, oh, I'm scared. I'm going to lose all my Bitcoin because quantum computers are going to come and everything's going to blow up. All right. So then we talk to the most popular mathematician professor in the topic in one of our universities that he has got some grants to study cryptography and Bitcoin in particular. And we ask him, can you come and tell us if this is something we should care about or not? And he gives us like a masterclass of cryptography that I have to tell you that half of the people didn't understand anything, but at least he had his students there as well. So at the end, after every meetup, after the speaker explains the details of the topic, then there is Q&A, and then there is a networking session. So it's good that he came with all his students and PhDs, so then we could learn more, a little bit more about what are these formulas that he was putting on the screen meant. And after that, some of us, we still do not have enough, so we go to have dinner together and we spend the night together until next time. And this is just one of the activities that we do. And then we also do workshops. So for example, and we could do a meetup of telling you how to be sovereign, how to run your own node, but you have to build it your own. And sometimes building a node, I can tell you like the instructions, but when you start building it, you discover that, I know, your computer doesn't boot. So then you have to connect it to the electricity or you have to change the USB or whatever. So then we do workshops. And those workshops are like more closed or small groups of people, maybe 1, 2, 3 trainers, and then 5 to 10, 15 tops attendees. And those are paid. So the meetups are for free. Everyone can join. We, the administrators of the community, pay for the, we book the room, we pay for the electricity, we pay for everything. So then we can talk to, or we can create an open space for Bitcoiners or newcomers to get to know each other. And then if they want to dig deeper and they want to have something more personalized, all right, do you want to learn how to build a node? come to our Node workshop and we'll provide everything. Or would you like to learn how to create your seed signer? Well, we download the maps of the, or the case of the seed signer. We go print them. We buy the little computers that are inside. We buy all the components and then you go there and you only need to assemble them and install the software. So this is one of the other activities. We have meetups, we have workshops, then we have random hangouts. So we're in the group. Hey, I'm off this afternoon. Somebody wants to meet? Yes, yes, yes. Okay, where do we meet? Here, boom, we meet. So it's so serendipitous. And then this year, for the first time, we have organized, and when I say we, I mean three of the admins, because we are 15 to 20 admins, three of the admins, Marcus, Rafa, and Fede, they organized the Bitcoin Ciphers Conference, the Barcelona Ciphers Conference. And that was like last week. And for example, Alex Zvetsky, CEO of the company I work for, Satlantis, he came, I came. So we had the chance to talk a little bit about our projects. And that was just all ciphers. Like we talked about parallel structures. If you're curious about entering into Bitcoin, how this affects, there were people from all over the world. It was an international conference. And there were the typicals, you know, the Europeans asking the typical questions. Oh, the taxes. Or how do I claim this? Or how do I connect my bank with my Bitcoin? And then there was the Argentinians laughing at us like, what do you mean? Like taxes? We're in Bitcoin, you know? It's like, it was such a fun experience to have people from different points of view to get to understand that we're talking about freedom. This, we have the chance now to be free. And those are just the most popular activities. Then we do also random, maybe once a year or twice a year, lunch or dinner. And then you go to in a house in the middle, outside of the strip of the city. And then you can cook and you can buy things with Bitcoin. But those are more specific activities like excursions, things like that. So, and because of that, I have the, because of all these activities, I say that we are the most active community in Spain. And I'm so proud of being part of this group. I learned a lot. It's just a group that rarely we speak about money, about, money from the numbers go up and all those things. We rarely speak about price. We mostly talk about how these technologies that we call freedom technologies can help us actually become free.
Yeah, it's cool. Barcelona is one city I haven't been to yet, and it's very high on my list. And listening to you talk about it now, it makes me feel like I need to find a reason to get there. So maybe if there's if the conference happens again next year.
Now you know, and you can join our Telegram group. Entering the Telegram group is for free. But as soon as you start talking about things that are not Bitcoin, you'll get banned and you'll get kicked out. So we have a team of snipers just getting ready. So we don't accept crypto or any other types of words. We have a database of words that you cannot say. So if you are a Bitcoin maxi, you're very, very welcome. And we can show you the city. We can show you all the places. I mean, it's easy to get all the places because there are not many places where you can spend your sats. But this is what we want. You know, we want to help the local economy to thrive.
And then you've made a global map of all the Bitcoin events that happen all over the world.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about it.
Because my job consists on learning about Bitcoiners because I work for a Bitcoin company and I'm building a product for Bitcoiners. My job is to be as close to Bitcoiners as possible. And when I use the term Bitcoiner, it encompasses the whole list of keywords I said before. It's not only a person that uses Bitcoin, but it's a person that is self-sovereign, or that is looking for freedom, or it is a frequent traveler, or that likes to foster local circular economies. So for me to find this type of people, I created a database of conferences, festivals, meetups, getaways of Bitcoiners. And I started creating like this spreadsheet, and I connected this spreadsheet with other databases that other websites, other Telegram groups. The problem is that maybe there is a database of all the events in Germany, but the format is different than if there is another database of all the events in Spain. So what I did is I normalized them all. I created this spreadsheet and it was very useful for me. And I organized them by date and it was easy for me. And I painted the the ones that already passed, you know, in black, so I cannot see it. And the ones that are next week in green, and the ones next year in whatever color. So for me, it was very easy to plan my schedule on where to go next, which conference to go next, which meetup to go next. But then I showed it to my CEO, and he said, like, interesting. We can use this internally. So it's not only for me, but it can be for him, and it can be for other team members. And then we said, wait, it can be used for anyone looking to hang out with the same type of people. So then we created, I decided to create this website that is called btceventsmap.com. And anyone can access it. We use like a Google Maps view, and there are pins of all the conferences and meetups in the world. You can filter by conference or by meetup. And then we organize them by which one is closer. So if there is any event that I forget to add there is a button that you can say, add your event. So then you can add your event, and to prevent spam, I will receive a notification, I will verify it. And if you type your email, I'll send you an email saying your event has been validated and now everybody can see it. So what started as a tool for me to pick where to go next, that I had to put a lot of hours to build, now I'm crowdsourcing it. So other people is helping me do my job, which is having a look or having an idea of what's going on, but also helps others. So I feel like if somebody has the time to post his event on Twitter, to promote his event on Twitter or on Instagram or whatever, I recommend anyone to put a little extra effort and upload it as well on btceventsmap.com, which you only need to add like, where is it taking place? What's the name of the event and the website? And if you want, you can give me your email so then I can reach out to you, say it's online. So what started as a job or a tool to do my job better, now I'm sharing it with other friends that I'm making on these conferences, and the database is growing. Maybe it will become, I hope it can become like a source for people to discover their next conference.
That's very cool, Lee. There is an astonishing number of Bitcoin events happening all around the world. And even just for myself, this has come up on a few different episodes we've done, but when I'm traveling, if there is a meetup I could make, it's such a cool thing to attend meetups in different cities or different countries and see what's going on there.
Me too. This is so important because, you know, we started talking about my past as an airline pilot. So there are different types of travelers. There are what I like to call them, the tourists and the travelers. So when you're a tourist, you just go to discover landmarks. But when you travel, sometimes you travel with a purpose. You like to meet like-minded people. So by finding meetups, Bitcoin meetups, it is an easy way to find people that you know for sure you'll click with them. So this is what I'm trying to, this is the group of people I'm trying to help now. People that is traveling with a goal. And this goal is not only take pictures of where they go or discover about the history of the place, but connecting, making, who knows, maybe long-lasting relationships.
Definitely. Yeah. The community, you know, it doesn't matter where you're from. It's a shared ideals and, I think the more you travel, the more you find that it doesn't matter where you came from. Yeah.
Yes, because I used to say, you know, I'm from Spain. I live in Barcelona, and Barcelona is a city in a region called Catalonia that we are very proud of ourselves. We used to be a country, but you know, countries are just definitions and time changes that. So at a time, I was like so proud of being Catalan, and Catalonia is not Spain and all these things. But the more you travel, you see that these are just political motors that are built to separate us. And the globalization, one of the benefits of globalization, or the benefit that we should use from globalization, is that now we are all closer to each other. So it's like religions, you know, religions, there have been around 15,000 religions since mankind exists. 15,000. I'm not talking about 10 or 100. Think about how many you can name with your fingers. 15,000. And the goal with religion is like, we have a moral code that will make us better and live better in prosperity and be good with each other. And none of them has accomplished that. That's the contrary. It's like politics. What it makes is to separate us from each other, to fight with each other. So what I'm trying to say is that when you have like this mentality, like, no, I'm from this part of the world, who cares where you're from? So what matters is what you do. So we are what we do. So traveling, when, and I do, I like to say that we are all world citizens and we can create our own culture, maybe picking the best parts of each culture that we discover, that we travel, or the friends that we make. And we don't have to travel to create like this world citizenship. We can just meet with people that travel. And maybe in those meetups, you see people, maybe you cannot afford to travel because you can't, or I don't know, you're handicapped, or for whichever reason, you cannot travel. There are many reasons that you can't. But that's why I recommend people to go to these meetups, because you'll find out people that has so many different points of view. And because we all share the same starting point of our conversation, which is, oh, Bitcoin. Ah, and then it's a starting point of the conversation, maybe an icebreaker or whatever. And we always have something to talk about. And we don't have to agree on everything, but I think we have a similar perspective on the world, on how the world works. And I think that not only understanding how it works, but I think that we have ideas on how to make it work better for prosperity.
I couldn't agree more. Jordi, I so appreciate you coming on. This has been a great conversation. For our listeners that would like to find more of you online, is there anywhere you'd like to send them?
Yes, please follow me on Nostr. And if you don't know what Nostr is, doesn't matter. It's atlantis.io. Like here, I don't know if you can see down on the left side of my picture. It's atlantis.io/Jordi. Follow me there. If you follow me there, you are on Nostr and you'll discover like this whole new rabbit hole about freedom of speech. So just follow me there.
Very cool. And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I'd like to thank you as well for tuning in and hope to see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits, supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies, and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.